New York City Housing Authority, NYCHA to the people who deal with it, is the biggest housing authority in the United States, and it owns about one out of every 13 rental units in the city. It also appears to be falling into bad shape, both financially and structurally. With me now for this week's underreported segment are Julia Vitullo-Martin, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute and Director of the Center for Rethinking Development, and City Council Member Rosie Mendez, the Chair of the Public Housing Subcommittee. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Julia, how big is the New York City Housing Authority?
Well, it is the largest in the country. Some people argue that Puerto Rico is a little bit bigger for various reasons, but New York has 343 projects with about 178,000 units.
So does that make it New York City's biggest landlord?
Probably. I mean, I've written that a couple of times, and nobody has ever challenged me, so I think so. Certainly, it's a major, major landlord, and because of New York's historic policies of integrating neighborhoods as much as possible racially and economically, NYCHA's projects are throughout the five boroughs. So every neighborhood either has or is adjacent to public housing.
And are all of its tenants low income?
All of its tenants are supposed to be low income, but the precise definitions of how households qualify and what income is counted have changed over the years. In the 1990s, NYCHA returned to its historic policy of encouraging as many working poor households as possible, rather than putting homeless families and desperately poor families at the top of its priority list.
So not everyone is falling below the poverty line.
Right. Although, of course, there are sort of different ways of describing what the poverty line is. I mean, everybody who lives, every NYCHA household is at least a working poor household.
And what's the average rent of a NYCHA apartment?
It had been, I haven't checked that just recently, but it had been $332 a month, I think in the summer. So it's roughly that.
Rosie, is that right?
It went up slightly. They increased rents in the last couple of years, so the average rent is about $378.
And didn't you grow up in NYCHA housing, Rosie?
Yes, I did.
What was it like then?
It was, growing up in New York City, the only safe, affordable housing. We always had heat. We didn't have vermin. Growing up in public schools, all the kids wanted to come to my apartment to come and study. That changed after the 70s, the fiscal crisis here in the 80s. We saw less heat and hot water, more repairs needed. The crack epidemic also hit us in the developments, and there was more crime.
So once funding was cut back because of an economic crisis, was it ever returned when things got better in the city?
Yes, and things did get better, but also NYCHA's housing stock was aging, so they got involved in doing the modernization programs, doing a lot of brickwork, and that was in the millions of dollars. And it's still an aging housing stock, so this is part of the problem they're seeing now.
Well, a listener who lives in the Queensbridge houses wrote on our comment line that nighttime light outages are often not repaired. Broken mailboxes or in some of the buildings haven't been repaired for years. And we've been reading in the papers about elevators and other things, and we'll get to why that remains such a problem. But first, let's just set some more of the groundwork. How does one get an apartment in a NYCHA building? Are there certain requirements?
You have to apply. You need to be income eligible. There's also preference for working families and domestic violence victims that go to the top of the list.
And do people tend to stay for long times?
Some people never move out. Some individuals do. Your rent is based on 30% of your income. which is part of the reason why my family moved out. Back then in the 80s, it was cheaper to find another apartment for less money. That's not the situation today. And some people have grown accustomed to the community and their neighbors and want to stay residing there.
Julia, what would you say are the biggest problems NYCHA is facing right now?
Can I actually comment on something?
You can say whatever you want, Julia.
Yes. Well, she makes an extremely important point about her family moving out when the 30% rule was imposed by the federal government. And I just want to comment, because New Yorkers, I think, frequently don't know this, that public housing has been very damaged over the years by both the Republicans and the Democrats. And the Republicans in particular are the ones who imposed the stringent income requirements that essentially drove working and upwardly mobile poor families out of New York public housing. So that particular requirement, which is something that NYCHA had fought desperately, was destructive for public housing all over the country, less here because NYCHA fought it so hard. And I also want to note that even though advocates in New York frequently think that Washington is going to come to the rescue of public housing at some point, it's probably not. So it's almost surely not, whether Democrats or Republicans are elected. And then even if it were to come to NYCHA's rescue, the relationship between Washington and New York on public housing has always been a very difficult one.
Because Washington has always had mixed feelings about New York?
Well, that,
or public housing.
But also because Washington has historically had extremely strict and, in my opinion, destructive design standards that New York resisted, and also very strict income standards that New York resisted. I mean, New York, by the way, was never proposing to use public housing for middle class and upper middle class people, but it was trying to keep strong working households in its projects.
But to some degree, couldn't we say that NYCHA has been a great success story? We have seen those films of the destruction of public housing in other cities, in St. Louis and Chicago, because the places had become unlivable. The NYCHA buildings here, despite some of the problems that they face, seem to have been able to provide pretty much what they were built to provide, haven't they?
Well, certainly NYCHA housing is better than public housing in most cities. There's no question about that. But I think the more urgent question for New Yorkers is, what should New York be doing with its public housing now? I mean, there really isn't anybody who would argue that if we had it all to do over again, we would build these projects the way we built them. And now the question is the future. What should happen to these projects in the future? NYCHA has had a running deficit for many years. Right now it's about $190 million deficit on a $3.4 billion budget. That deficit is not going away. It's not going to be eased by Washington or Albany, and certainly not by the Bloomberg administration. So I would like to see NYCHA look at the model that has been successful elsewhere, particularly in Atlanta, of looking to sell its air rights. The Manhattan Borough President, Scott Stringer, recently put out an excellent report noting that NYCHA has enough air rights without doing anything. It's got enough air rights to build 30 skyscrapers. So now I'm not saying they should do that. I'm just saying they should be looking at that and studying the financial and neighborhood consequences of that kind of strategy.
Rosie, do you like that proposal?
I think there has to be more input from the authority and from the community to see what kind of developments, you know, what new housing is going to be built there. We certainly need more affordable housing, and I applaud the Housing Authority for not currently selling any of its housing stock. But also the borough president's report is just giving raw numbers. There's a lot of federal regulations. So while the raw numbers say we have this much air rights, you're not going to be able to build everywhere where there are those air rights.
My guests are Rosie Mendez of the City Council and Julia Vitullo-Martin, Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, Director of the Center for Rethinking Development. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. So there's a $90 million deficit.
$190 million. This year.
Where is that money going to come from?
Well, the problem has been that the federal government has been consistently underfunding the Housing Authority. And since
Is this during the Bush administration, or does this go back earlier?
Since 2001, the Housing Authority has received $2.7 billion less than it should have for all of its expenses.
And the state hasn't been willing to
give
us any of that money?
Under Pataki in 1998, Governor Pataki stopped giving the Housing Authority money. And the Housing Authority sued the state and lost to get funding for its 15,000 units that were created by the state.
Well, a year ago, then Governor Spitzer signed legislation to increase shelter allowance to public housing authorities serving families on public assistance. What has that meant in concrete terms for NYCHA?
Well, I think it was long overdue. Now it treats NYCHA like every other landlord in the city, whereas before they were again being underfunded. And long term, it means about $46 million extra in revenues.
Now,
it's being phased in, so they're not going to see all that money all at once.
So, but we did get some money there, and the city owns the land, it owns the buildings. Why such a huge shortfall? Are operating expenses going up, Julia?
Well, operating expenses are going up. That's just life.
I mean, is this rising fuel costs costing us $190 million?
Well, the same factors that have been causing costs to rise in the private sector have affected the public sector. And that's just a fact of life, and it's going to keep on going. And meanwhile, the Housing Authority is under all sorts of regulatory pressures to keep its income from rents low. I mean, it doesn't have the ability to increase rents on most of its tenants, which is, you know, just one more reason that the Housing Authority has got to do what a private landlord would do if it were in this situation of having a huge operating deficit. And, by the way, we haven't even talked about the capital problems, but that's just, the $190 million is just the operating deficit. The Housing Authority also has the problem that the vast majority of its buildings are over 40 years old. And most of those buildings need capital repair, and it doesn't have the money for that either.
And I've heard rumors that there could be layoffs at NYCHA soon.
Well, NYCHA actually has been trimming its workforce and will continue to do that. It's been trying very hard not to trim the operational workforce and to trim the central instead, but there's going to be, you know, clearly more of that. But I would like to see NYCHA do something that I think, in fact, it is inclined to do and has been looking at somewhat, which is looking at its resources as if it were a private landlord, trying to figure out, does it have buildings, and I think it does, which are very deteriorated but are in good areas that it would be able to sell, and use that money to capitalize improvements in other buildings.
And where would the tenants go?
Well, NYCHA has high occupancy overall, but it's definitely got some buildings that are undesirable. And if it were doing an Atlanta-style redevelopment in which it was using some of its air rights to build in its underdeveloped projects, for example, a very good underdeveloped project is the Frederick Douglass houses in Manhattan. That's underdeveloped by at least 30%, maybe by 50%. In other words, you'd be able to reconfigure that site to put in additional housing without putting in destructive, excessive housing. I mean, you know, we think of the public housing as looming, because it does, which is why I say almost anybody looking at public housing today would say we wouldn't build it this way again. So if you get rid of the idea for the moment that it's looming, and you look at the amount of open space, unused open space, but open space that public housing has, and you can see, you know, immediately you could reconfigure these projects to be far more attractive and to have more people.
Rosie, you're in a gentrifying, you represent a gentrifying area, don't you?
Correct.
Would be one of those desirable areas. How much public housing is in your district?
Over 10,000 units, but I take offense to what I heard about moving individuals from desirable areas to undesirable areas.
That isn't actually what I said.
Okay. But what everyone must understand is when this public housing was built, it was all undesirable areas. Now times have changed, and now it's becoming desirable. But that doesn't mean
actually,
that we move 10,000 people out of my district.
Historically, that's just not true. New York deliberately over the years, Wagner administration being a prime example, deliberately cited public housing in desirable areas. I mean, we all remember the Lindsay years when there was a huge fight in Forest Hills. But before that, New York had consistently cited its public housing in desirable areas. Undesirable, too, but desirable. That's why we've got the mix we have today.
Well, we're pretty much out of time. You want to sum up what you had to say, Rosie? Do you think that selling air rights, I know it would be a quick economic fix. Do you think it would solve the bigger problems that NYCHA faces?
I think we need to look at that, but we need to look at a model that includes building more affordable housing, because we have a housing crisis in this city. NYCHA is one of the first public housing. It's worked here. You look at other cities across the country. I think it's a model that works, and we need to support it and continue to make it work here.
And in New Orleans, after Katrina, the opposite approach was taken, pretty much eliminating public housing.
And I thought that was a shame. It was the only housing that survived Katrina, and I think there was a decision there by the legislators to demolish it when it didn't need to be.
Rosie Mendez is the chair of the Public Housing Subcommittee as a city council member. Julia Vitullo-Martin is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and director of the Center for Rethinking Development. And I want to thank the two of you for talking to us today.
Thank you.
About a very serious problem New York City is facing.